well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Second Amendment.
That was the late, great Charlton Heston. And I'm one of your hosts, Joe Dano. And sitting across from me at the table is Lee Castle.
Hi, Joe. It's good to be here. We're finally doing it.
It's been a long time coming. So, yes, it absolutely feels great. We're here today to discuss the Second Amendment, various aspects about it. I was at a party last night discussing firearms at a table where not everybody necessarily agrees.
Interesting.
Agrees about the Second Amendment in the same way that I do, which I'll admit at times I have trouble understanding because it seems extremely simple. Shall not be infringed. To me, there's not a lot of wiggle room there. Various states, various courts have had different ideas. Some cities have had different ordinances. Some of them have been shot down. But regardless of what some of those court cases have said, I still think it's very simple. Shall not be infringed. And that means...
I think that scares a lot of people.
It absolutely scares a lot of people. Unfortunately, I think the people that it scares the most are probably the ones who could learn a lot by actually diving into firearms. I think the people that it scares the most are the ones that are probably the most ignorant about it. And when I say ignorant, I don't mean rude. I mean, actually there's a lack of knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was true for me. I had no experience with firearms prior to joining the Army. And in the, early 90s, I got my first job, in the firearms industry working at a gun store. I thought that I would like some extra money for Christmas. So I went to, there was a gun range near our home. I went to the gun range, applied, and got a job selling guns. And it was very eye-opening. I'd go in on a weekend morning, 8, 9 o'clock. And on those weekend mornings, I would sell guns almost nonstop. Back then, we didn't have the computers or paperwork. It takes a while to do, if you've never purchased a firearm, it takes a while to run that paperwork. And if you've purchased a firearm, you know, even now, it can be a lengthy process. But back then, it was all hand done. And so I'd start selling guns at the beginning, and I'd do nothing but show guns and do paperwork for guns until the end of the day. And sometimes we were, three or four deep at the firearms counters at this particular store. It was really busy. And I started to realize how many people are armed. And that was before there was any concealed carry, before the numbers of firearms were what they are now.
What year would that have been?
Early 90s, 91 maybe, somewhere in there.
And Illinois has come a long way in regards to what's allowed.
And I remember, coming from a family where firearms really certainly weren't encouraged, especially on my maternal grandmother's side. My grandfather hunted. He had a shotgun that he had to take apart and hide in his closet because grandma wasn't down with the whole gun thing. She thought they had magical qualities that could spring to life and hurt people. But what happened to me is I recall, vividly coming home. And, I thought sort of the gun store thing would be, a customer here or there, and didn't realize how busy we'd be, especially on those weekends. And I remember talking to my mom and saying, Mom, you'd be amazed at how many people have guns. And wow, it's pretty interesting. It's not a bloodbath. It's not like the OK Corral. There's not gunfights breaking out everywhere. That actually things are pretty peaceful considering how many of your neighbors, so to speak, are armed.
Yeah, that's interesting because I had a similar upbringing where firearms were actually discouraged.
Yeah, kind of taboo.
In the house. And my introduction to firearms in general was shooting clay pigeons.
Did you go, was it a family member that introduced that to you? How did you wind up shooting trap?
A friend, a close friend that, I became friends with in high school. He grew up in a household where they did hunting and they did trap shooting as, with his brother and his father. And, asked me one time if I want to go with to go trap shooting. And I said, yes, because I wanted to not be at home. While in all honesty, having no idea what trap shooting was, but it did not take me very long at all.
The term trap shooting really doesn't give it away.
No,
it actually sounds dangerous.
Right, but what going with meant was I wasn't at home sitting doing nothing. So right. I was all for it. And it literally. It piqued my interest so much that first time that I asked that same individual on the way home, when are we doing this again? So we went back a couple weeks later, and after that, I spoke to my parents about possibly wanting a shotgun, and I was a little surprised that the answer was the first thing you'll purchase before a shotgun is a safe to put it in. And I was surprised, not that doesn't make sense. It may, I was shocked because it meant there was the opportunity to possibly purchase a shotgun for myself. And that was the beginning of it. And then ironically enough, my first purchase ended up being a pistol, not a shotgun. I was about 21 years old, maybe going on 22 when I bought my first pistol. And then over the years, purchased a few firearms, but I would have to say in the last the past 5 or 6 years, the floodgates have just completely opened, and probably would purchase one just because it was a Wednesday.
So, Joe, let's get back. I was kind of interested in your story. You were at a dinner party the other day, and I was wondering if we could circle back to that.
Yeah,
where there was some disagreement over that Second Amendment, that fundamental right to keep and bear arms.
Yeah, it was a little interesting because there's the initial, it was family. And so there's that initial almost hesitation, like, do we want to get into this? We're at a party. You know, there's usually three topics that can really ruin a party pretty quick. Politics, religion, gun ownership. Those are three big ones that can send everybody home pretty quickly. But we were able to discuss it in a pretty respectful manner, which is appreciated. But there are plenty of people that still believe the best option for an individual to combat somebody that's trying to do them harm is to retreat and call the police. And although I don't think that that's a terrible idea, it's not always applicable. And it is definitely not always the best option.
Yeah, certainly not. From my perspectives, in the training realm of this industry of training people in personal protection and my experience in the personal protection realm, that's certainly true. I think, your first instinct and the best and safest instinct in many, many ways is to be able to preclude yourself from that self-defense situation if you can. You're right. It just simply is not always possible. In those times when it's not possible, and during those times when the level of force is deadly, then your best alternative is to have a firearm, to solve that situation. So, yeah.
I agree wholeheartedly. Now, with that being said, I'm obviously of the belief that an individual not only has the right to defend themselves with a firearm, by carrying a firearm, I take it a little bit further in the belief that I think it's our responsibility. I certainly don't want family members counting on someone else. I certainly don't want to count on someone else. That means that that is my responsibility. That is my wife's responsibility. As my kids grow up, that will be their responsibility. So with that, it's not just purchasing a firearm. I talked to plenty of people, and especially over the past few years with some of the things that we've seen happen, they run out to the gun store and go get a firearm. And I'll talk to them 3 months later, and I'm like, hey, how's it going? You know, how are you doing at the range? Never even took it out. I don't think that's much better than not having a firearm, because training, practice, good practice, is really what's needed to be proficient. And honestly, it's more than just carrying a firearm. It's situational awareness. It's paying attention to your surroundings. It's noticing what other people are doing. It's avoiding a situation. Ideally, I think the vast majority of people that carry a firearm for self-defense of themselves or their family genuinely hope they never have to use it.
Yeah.
So if they can avoid a situation, then avoid the situation. If you get if there's a bad feeling or something doesn't look right, drive around the block. You know, avoid that store, go back a half hour later. Anything along those lines, but it is our responsibility. It is our individual responsibilities. With that being said, I do understand not everybody should have a firearm. And I don't mean that from a legal aspect. I mean, there are some people that would not train, don't have the ability to train. They're absolutely petrified with a thought. And if that cannot be overcome, then those people are better off without one, is my thought on it.
Yeah. Haven't been in the training realm for a long time now, it seems like, since at least 2012 or so, I believe. I'm torn on that subject because on the one hand, a handgun especially is a pretty simple object. There's that, you know, there's the round hole where all the bad stuff comes out. And then there's a button that you press, a trigger, that makes the bad stuff come out. And all you got to do is point the round hole at the thing you want to leave you alone. And then squeeze the trigger. And at a certain level, it doesn't take much training. Clearly, I agree with you, especially back in those in the 90s when there wasn't even concealed carry. You know, concealed carry requires that 18 hours of training to get your concealed carry license. But prior to that, in Illinois, to apply for your FOID and purchase a firearm, there was no training involved at all. And like I said, there wasn't a huge, bloodbath, with people, you know, shooting themselves and getting into arguments and shooting their neighbors. Although all that stuff does happen with the numbers of firearms that are present in our population, it potentially could be much, 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 much worse. So, you know, on the one hand, I'm torn about the whole training issue. And listen to me, I'm a firearms trainer. I do agree with you that it's a responsibility. I do know that, like a musical instrument, I'm even fond of sort of saying lately, you know, the same thing with exercise and dieting. Those are responsibilities as well. And anytime you start getting into those areas, you find out that it kind of sucks, because once you take the responsibility of being physically more fit. You start finding out how difficult it is to make that happen, given all the other things you've started recently, right? And I'm sure that's been an issue for you, finding the time. And then once you find the time, you know, it's not just buying the bicycle, right? You got to find time to get on that thing and ride.
To prioritize it.
Yeah.
To make it something that you are going to do even when you don't want to.
Yeah, and then there's a knowledge curve as well, and you really it's incumbent upon you to find the right information so that you're accomplishing the goals that you want to accomplish in that little bit of time that you carve out to do that.
Sure, maximize it.
That's how owning a firearm. Is if you take it seriously enough. You know, Joe, you're one of the, you know, I would say you're like a one percenter, right? Should get you a patch, right? And, you know, I've trained a lot of people over the years, but I'll tell you, of all the people that I train, only a very, very small percentage carry on a regular basis and then actually train to be able to do that, not only to equip themselves properly, but then actually train to be able to do that well. And you're one of them that really does put some time and effort into doing that.
That's an interesting point. So some of the people that have taken your course and that you've trained and they've gotten their license to carry a firearm concealed, if they are not doing it for that reason, to carry a firearm on a regular basis, why are they taking the course?
Well, a lot of people just don't feel comfortable with the firearm at all. What I've found is that, so I had to learn a lot of things, right? Not coming from a firearm background, a firearm family. I go to work at a gun store and I find out that actually a lot of average people own guns and that we're pretty much okay. And then since I've been training in the firearms training realm, I'm finding out that most of the people that come and take a course like concealed carry, you know, I was concerned because here I am, I train people in my home.
Right.
And one of my big concerns is like I'm going to have people that I don't know mm-hmm. coming into my home. And, what if I have a bunch of kooks
right.
showing up at my house? Well, here I am 10, 11 years later, and most of the people that I train have become my friends. They're almost like, you're almost like family to me. I mean, that's been my experience, and what I've found out is that people that take on that additional responsibility of their own personal protection they're highly conscientious. They're very, you know, people that aren't worried, people who aren't conscientious, but want to protect themselves. Just, they find a weapon, whether it's a firearm or a steak knife, and they carry it with them everywhere they go.
Gotcha.
But a conscientious person goes out and gets training to find out the do's, the don'ts, and the hows to make that happen. And so what I have found out is that most of the people that are doing this fall into that latter category. They're people who like I said, high in conscientiousness. They want to check all the boxes and they want to get that information because they don't feel comfortable even with the firearm in their home or in their possession unless they have at least some rudimentary abilities with it. Then there's a whole another layer. I've had plenty of people that they don't carry because they don't feel like the 16 hours is enough. And they just come to me and they're like, I ask them, they'll come back for their renewal or there'll be someone who trained with someone else and they come to me and I say, you know, have you been carrying? And they're like, oh, no, I haven't. Why not? Well, that 16 hours just wasn't enough. I don't feel comfortable enough to carry. So I've been recommending people train, at least quarterly.
And that makes plenty of sense, because within that 16-hour course, quite a bit of it's class time.
Yes.
It's not actual hands on a firearm, learning a grip and maybe learning different firearms. I mean, if I recall correctly, the qualification for the concealed carry in Illinois is 5, 7, 10 yards, 10 shots each one. And you have to put 21 of them on target. So that's 30 shots. Basically, it's 30 shots of training of using that firearm. And realistically, based on all sorts of variables, different people are comfortable with different firearms, whether it's a revolver, a semi-automatic, a full size, a subcompact. And that is typically not within that course. It's something that I think people should learn after the fact through additional training.
Absolutely, Joe. Arming yourself to protect yourself and your family. That's the scope of information, whether it be the do's and don'ts of the Concealed Carry Act in Illinois, whether it's the law of self-defense, whether it's the function of a firearm, whether it's the maintenance. This is a really big animal. There's so much to know. And then especially in that category of sort of like just the awareness of how violence happens, the sort of the security preparedness aspect of personal protection is so huge. It's one of the things I really want to bring to the table in these conversations. If there's some things that I can impart to our listening audience when we have one, when it's not just our families right. listening to us, but when we have one, you know, I certainly hope that I can bring some of that to the table. Just sort of this idea of what, John Carrillo over at Active Self-Protection on the YouTube does a great job of collecting and disseminating information on how violence really happened. And we're so lucky to be in this game at this juncture where there is so much real world video available that was never available to us.
It's eye opening.
It is now. It's eye opening. You have to be careful. We have to be cautious. I think if I've posted the blog, I'm not sure if I have. But I definitely want to write a blog just about being careful not to take too many lessons from law enforcement as they apply to us as armed civilians, that there can be some it's a little bit perilous to draw too many, because a lot of what's out there are dash cam and the body worn cameras that officers carry. And we just have to be careful that we don't misconstrue or misinterpret some of the lessons that can be applied. We got to be pretty cautious about what is applicable to us as armed citizens.
Yeah, and there's a lot there. There's a lot there in terms of what you're allowed to do, what you're allowed to intervene in, which is essentially, as I understand it, being concealed carry license holder and firearm carrier, it's not your job to intervene. Nope. If it's not a self-defense situation for you and or your family, that's, you don't go look for it. If you're in the immediate surrounding, but you can retreat and you and your family are going to be safe, then ultimately that's your duty. And I think that's difficult for some people. There's a lot of people out there that have the innate instinct to protect others. And that gets to be a really fine line to walk, because people with a firearm, with a concealed carry license, are not at all there to protect society in general.
Yeah.
And that's something that in the future, one of the guests that I would I would like to have, among others, is a criminal defense attorney. We're going to have a Second Amendment attorney.
Yeah, let's go there, because that would be a great segue for us to start talking about what we have planned for people who might want to tune into this.
Sure.
I think that's one of the more fascinating and more exciting prospects for our podcast.
Absolutely.
And so yeah, why don't you go down, sort of do a little rundown of what we will hopefully have coming for the folks.
Yeah, without a doubt. Our goal is, the format for the bulk of our podcast is probably going to steer more towards like interview style. I am sure there are going to be instances where something happens, whether it's in legislation, locally, federally, where maybe we want to sit down and have a discussion about it. But there's going to be plenty of interview style podcasts where we speak to maybe manufacturer representatives for anybody that is looking for new items coming out from a certain manufacturer. We mentioned having a 2A attorney, a criminal defense attorney, local gun store owner. I'd really like to talk to one or two of those fellas just to see how things that happen in society, whether it's through state law or the awareness of having to protect yourself by some of the events that occurred over the past couple of years, how that affects a gun store directly. I'd like to talk to some collectors of firearms. There is a large segment of the Second Amendment community that isn't really based around self-defense. It's based around, you know, hunting.
That's so true. Yeah. Hunting for sure. That sort of springs to everyone's mind, but the people that just who are just collectors,
sure.
A big part of the firearms community, for lack of a better word.
Without a doubt, a lot of those fellows that can associate a value to some firearms right off the top of their head, because they know what's rare, they know it's collectible. They've bought and sold many, many firearms. So I'd like to sit down and, you know, discuss that with some of them. And in time, politicians.
Yeah, like, I'm interested in speaking to some politicians too, and see where their head is with respect to some of these issues.
Absolutely. You know, the second, to advocate for the Second Amendment means that we need to have people vote. We need to get people to register so they're able to vote. And that we vote in politicians that understand what the Second Amendment truly is. They're in favor of the Second Amendment. And all of that starts at a local level, because as many federal laws there are, and even state laws there are, there's communities such as Highland Park, Illinois, that come up with a city ordinance that will ban certain kinds of firearms. So it all starts locally and develops from there. So politicians, I think what would be fun is talk to maybe a beginner.
Yeah, I actually, one of the things that really interests me the most is talking to some beginners, and for two reasons. One, as a trainer, it will help me be a better trainer. I do, of course, talk to my clients down the road on occasion. They'll take a class with me. I find out during the course of the class that they're, you know, a first time firearms owner. And then sometimes I'll, you know, touch base with them a month or two later. And so I do have some information, but just purposefully going and taking some of those people that I run into and bringing them in if they're willing to. And interviewing them would be really interesting from my perspective as a trainer to help future students. But then I think hearing from them, the listeners could benefit a ton from that.
Absolutely.
Just by hearing what people who are getting into guns for the first time, what they're running into, and you could be a more informed person if that happens to be you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Sometimes as individuals that are very passionate about firearms and the Second Amendment, we'll sometimes forget some of the stuff that we didn't know 20 years ago, 25 years ago. I am 100% always in favor of somebody asking a question, because if they don't know, it is legitimately not a dumb question. And the only way to help cultivate the two-way community and help tamper down the misinformation is to politely, genuinely support people that don't know as much, that have the questions. I actually enjoy that aspect of it. I'll also be the first one to say that's that's beyond me. I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to answer that, which is important to know what your individual limits are.
For sure. Well, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Some reviews.
Yeah. So
I know we put them up on the, we've got some up on the 2A Today website.
We have a website.
People prefer the text version.
The website address is www.2A as in Apple, the word today, TODAY.US. www.2ATODAY.US. We've reviewed up on the website, we've reviewed some firearms. I believe there's at least, I know there's at least one type of ammunition and some accessories. There's a few pages to the website. There's a page that lends itself towards news articles, both local and federal news articles for legislature and whatnot and the outcomes of some of them. There's also some articles where a firearm has been used in self-defense. And I feel that's important to put up there to remind people that that is a lot more common than I think many people really realize it is.
I think more common also than the armed citizen who uses a gun inappropriately.
Absolutely.
I think there are criminals that use guns, and we all know about that.
That is a great point. So you can check that out in addition to blogs that both Lee and I have written and will continue to update. And Lee and I would like to thank everybody for listening to our first podcast as we look forward to bringing you more in the future.